providing real solutions for real business challenges. Welcome to FNF Unplugged, Season 4. Conversations with professionals across the country, exploring business topics and empowering personal growth in real estate, financial services, and the title insurance industry.
Well, thanks everyone for joining us here today in what is probably our final recording of an FNF Unplugged here for the year 2023. And I cannot think of a better person to have on for our final recording of 2023 than Andy Walden, who is Vice President, Enterprise Research and Strategy at ICE. Andy is the co-host of the Mortgage Monitor, which is a monthly webcast that everyone should listen to. He has been on CNBC. He is becoming a real serious media personality here. So I don't know how much longer we're going to be able to keep Andy coming back, but really happy to have him here today to talk about where we are, literally, in the marketplace and where he sees us going into 2024. So, Andy, thanks again for joining us.
You bet. I appreciate you having me again.
Well, and just sort of jumping into it here, talking about mortgage performance, given the Fed's efforts to tame inflation and the pressure that's putting on the overall economy, is there a chance we could overshoot the goal? And we just saw as recently, I guess, as yesterday, Fed Chair Powell talking about perhaps as many as three interest rate cuts in 2024. I'm one of those people who, that 10% who wagered that he was going to do one cut before the end of the year. So my over-under in Vegas on that is very poor. And if you see me at a roulette table, do not bet the way I do. But all that being said, is there a chance we could overshoot the goal? And are we seeing any signs of weakness among mortgage holders right now, whether delinquencies or foreclosures?
Yeah, when you look at past performance, there's always that chance that we overshoot and see some rises in unemployment, most certainly. But when you look at what's going on the ground right now, and you look at delinquency and performance numbers out there, they're holding really strong on the mortgage side, right? Overall, mortgage delinquencies are still more than a percentage point below where they were in the early 2000s. They're more than a half a percentage point below where they were in 2019, kind of heading into the pandemic. And more acutely, when you start to look at the more serious end of that spectrum, right? 90 plus day delinquencies hit a 17-year low last month. Foreclosure referral activity down 35%. Active foreclosure inventory down 25% below pre-pandemic levels. Sale volumes 50% below pre-pandemic levels. And so when you kind of look across the board there, you're seeing a lot of very strong numbers. Now, the expectation is as we move into 2024, you know, we've likely seen the bottom there in terms of overall delinquency rates this year. We'll likely start to trend higher next year, but things are looking relatively good. Now, there are some areas where I think we should have a more acute focus, certainly that FHA space without any kind of meaningful private label security market like we saw in the lead up to the great financial crisis. That FHA space is going to be one to watch closely as we move into next year. And you're already seeing a little bit of kind of upward swing in early stage delinquencies there, especially among more recent vintages that have been more stressed by the tight affordability that we've seen in the market there, higher DTIs, credit score shifts, things of that nature. There's certainly some areas to focus on, but there are a lot of positives coming out of that mortgage performance space right now as well, right? When you look at those serious delinquencies, 70% are still in loss mitigation or forbearance or bankruptcy and are protected from foreclosure. Servicers are still heavily leaning on some of those tools that we gained through the pandemic, most notably forbearance. And then when you look at the equity side of the house, you know, among those serious delinquencies, three out of those five borrowers that are seriously past due have at least 20% equity in their home, right? So they have incentive to stay there, work with their servicers. There's much more limited walkaway risk than we saw last time around. And so, yeah, I mean, when we look at 2024, expectations are that, you know, we'll come off these record lows in terms of delinquencies, but still a pretty strong environment overall in terms of mortgage performance.
Well, that's really overall great to hear. Things will hold up, particularly given the interest rate stress the entire housing finance industry has been under for the last 18 months. I understand that ICE has a suite of rate lock indices that detail what's being locked in by borrowers on a daily basis. What's that telling you about the mortgage market? And do you have an overall expectation as to rates for next year?
Yeah, we're absolutely excited about getting to use that ICE index more in the ICE origination data across the board to gain additional insights into what's going on out there in the market. I mean, it's an interesting time to be talking about interest rates right now. We've seen this massive bond rally. We've seen this, you know, massive mortgage rally over the last 6 weeks. If we were having this conversation in October, I think it would be much more doom and gloom. I think there's more optimism around the mortgage and housing market today than I've felt in a long, long time, at least in a year since we saw the last kind of bond and mortgage rate rally. So good to see a reduction overall out there in terms of interest rates. And I think that picks up the prospects here as we head into 2024. If we look at interest rates themselves, we're roughly a full percentage point below where we were in October. Now, that was a 23-year low, and it was very, very constrictive. And we saw purchase activity hit an 11-year low, and you know, and refinances dwindle out there in the market. And same with home sale activity. But I think this rate rally will give us a little bit of a boost as we move into next year. In terms of outlooks on 30-year rates, if you look at the composite forecast out there in the market right now, it's, you know, 6.5% rates at the end of next year. But that same forecast had rates at 7.25% entering 2024, and we're clearly well below that at this point. And so maybe some opportunity to beat the current existing forecasts out there in terms of overall interest rates. But I'm a little bit hesitant, having watched the market over the last 2 years, to get too optimistic about what's going on right now and take more of a balanced approach out there. And especially when you look at, you know, the last 5 years or so in interest rate forecast, the average forecast is about a 1 percentage point miss in either direction 12 months out. So, I mean, we could see rates well below 6.5. We could see them in the low 6. We could see them in the high 5 by the end of next year. We could also see them, you know, at 7 or above. And that, you know, what we see from those rates is really going to dictate what we see from the market. But certainly in a Goldilocks zone right now in terms of the economic news coming in the door, the bond market's loving it, the mortgage market's loving it, and we're certainly seeing a nice rally down in terms of interest rates out there as we enter 2024.
Well, and as you say, high fives, that certainly has a double entendre here. If you see rates start to get into those areas, they'll be dancing in the streets. And given those expectations, again, how do you see rates impacting 2024 originations? We see material differences in volume and credit quality?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think we'll see a number of shifts, right? If you look at the composite forecast for originations, I think the November forecast, if you look at some of those big guys in the industry, had them at $1.9 to $2 trillion next year. And when they came out and you looked at the forecast at the time, those looked really optimistic in terms of what we could see, right? If you look historically at how many refinance candidates there would be under those scenarios and pull-through rates we've been seeing and how the purchase market has reacted, you know, it suggested maybe closer to 1.6, 1.7 next year. Now that 1.9 to 2 trillion looks a little bit more realistic as we see rates rally late this year. And so I think there certainly is some upside shift in outlook over the last month and a half as rates have come down in terms of what we could see. Now, when we start to look at expectations for market makeup next year and what things could look like, I think we're still going to be heavily purchase centric, right? It was, you know, over the last few months, last few quarters, it's been 85, 88% purchase lending out there in the market. We're not going to be that dominant in terms of the purchase side, but certainly all of that building and utilization of purchase pipelines is going to be well spent and continue to carry forward and pay dividends next year. But it's looking more like, you know, 3/4 purchase lending next year, which is still historically strong, but not quite as purchase dominant as what we were seeing this year. On the refinance side, I think cash outs are still going to play a major factor out there in the market next year. And you could see a little bit of increased utilization as that equity becomes a little bit more advantageous or attractive to use at a little bit lower rates. And then, you know, hopefully we'll start to see that rate term refinance market pick up a little bit as well. We were just pulling some numbers this morning just to look at the mortgages that have been taken out over the last couple of years and where those rates are at and where we could start to pick up pockets of volume coming back. And there's about 500,000 borrowers that have taken out mortgages over the last little over a year, year and a half, that have rates above 7.5%, right? So those are borrowers that are kind of borderline on in the money already right now and late this year. There's 1.1 million that have taken out mortgages at 7% or higher interest rates. There's kind of these nuanced pockets, right? There's the biggest individual volume is kind of in the high 6% range of folks that didn't want a 7% rate. So they kind of bought themselves down to just below it, I think, to make themselves feel a little bit better. But there's a little bit of opportunity in these specific pockets. Those are all very optimistic numbers compared to where we've been. They look good compared to where we've been. I think it's important to note that over the last 20 plus years, we have averaged about 400,000 refis a month. So in that context, we're still talking about a relatively subdued refinance market. But hey, any news is good news right now in that space, and certainly some potential for some rate term refi as rates are expected to ease in 2024.
Well, that's great to hear. And I know, you know, when you're talking about refinances, some lenders I've spoken to, they are hopeful. And of course, as the old saying goes, hope's a poor plan. But given the record high amount of credit card debt in the country, that they think that that will assist them in some refinance activity in the first quarter. We'll see. People are strange. You never know how they're going to react. But that's great news that the, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel is apparently not an oncoming train. Tell me again, has the improvement in interest rates in November and December had any impact on the home affordability issues and crisis?
Yeah, they absolutely have, right? The needle's moving in the right direction, which is good to see. I mean, throughout 2023, it's been storyline after storyline of affordability getting worse and worse and worse. And it kind of crescendoed in October when affordability hit a 39-year low. And for a median earner buying the median home, it took over 40% of your income just to make the principal and interest payment on the purchase of a home, which obviously puts a lot of those folks out of the running for home buying. And you saw the impacts of that in terms of originations and home sale and prices out there in the market. We've now started to see that needle move in the opposite direction, right? We're down from 40% of income required to buy that median home down to 37% as we stand here today. And when you look through 2024, I think the broad expectation, at least based on those interest rate forecasts out there, is that we'll continue to see that needle move in the right direction throughout 2024. And you know, we'll see some improvement in terms of overall home affordability. Now, even if rates got into the mid 6% range by next year and home prices didn't rise anymore and we saw average income growth, we'd still at the end of next year be worse than we were at the peak of the market in the great financial crisis. And so this is something that's not going to dissolve and go away quickly. Going to be a multi-year process to see the overall housing market as a whole normalize, but certainly home affordability to feel more like normal. But at least the expectation is that we're going to be gradually moving in the right direction, and hopefully the worst is behind us here in 2023, knock on wood.
So you think this will improve downstream demand then as we move forward here?
I think it will, right? And when you look at purchase applications and rate locked out over the last few weeks as interest rates have come down, the good news is that you've seen a little bit of a rebound there in terms of overall applications. As rates kind of got into August and September ranges, into the low 7% range, we saw demand and applications kind of return to seasonally adjusted July and August levels. And so you are seeing borrowers return to the market. Now, what we aren't seeing is, you know, borrowers psychologically get used to where rates are right now. I think there is this feeling, or at least this hope in the market, that that home buyers get used to looking at the number 7 or get used to looking at the number 6 on the front end of an interest rate. And we aren't seeing that quite yet, right? It very much feels like more of a mathematical reaction where rates get back to 7, demand gets back to, you know, what we've seen over the last few months in terms of 7% interest rates. But certainly coming off the lows that we saw there in October and November and starting to trend in the right direction. And that gives you hope that, you know, as interest rates ease, that demand will come back with those interest rates.
To your point about the psychological impact, first mortgage I ever had in 1979 was 6.5%. And that was considered to be a pretty good rate. And I still keep, just for personal interest, a rate book. When lenders used to put out rate books where at every interest rate, eighth of a percent, it showed you in round numbers what your principal and interest payment might be on a monthly basis. The one I have was put out by Citibank in 1980, and it starts at 10%.
It's so true, right? And you hear a lot of conversations about 7% is an average interest rate if you look over the last 50 years. And it's true, right? I mean, if you just run a simple average of interest rates over the last 50 years, we're kind of right in that middle right now. The more challenging part from an affordability environment is when you look back in the, and this is true from the 70s, 80s, 90s, all the way up through the early 2000s, it used to be that, you know, the median home price was 3.5 times the median household income. We hit a record high last year at 6-to-1, right? So those 7% rates and above kind of worked in some cases. I mean, 18% rates were restrictive even back then. But those 7% interest rates work in an environment where your average home price is only 3.5 times your average income. When you start to throw a 6-to-1 home price income ratio into a 7% interest rate environment, that's when things start to get jammed up. And that's exactly what we've seen throughout 2022 and 2023, is that 70s, 80s era price to income ratio is getting thrown into 70s, 80s era, or I guess the 2013 price to income ratio is getting thrown into a 70s, 80s interest rate era, and they're clashing with one another. And we're seeing the results of that in the market right now.
And saying, what about inventory? I mean, that's always a conversation as we've had. As we all know, drastic shortages in listings in recent years have contributed first to surging and now very sticky home prices. Mm-hmm. Have things got any better on the available inventory front? And are there any markets that stand out from an inventory perspective one way or the other?
Yeah. And I mean, the good news is that they are getting better, right? Almost universally across the country. So if we look over the last 4 months nationally, 4 months ago, we were at less than half the level of inventory that we should have been. And when we adjust for typical seasonal patterns, we've seen that deficit cut from a 50% shortage down to a 38% shortage. Now, is 38% good? Is it where you want to be? No, but it's certainly a movement in the right direction in terms of overall inventory out there in the market. You asked about what areas of the country kind of pop out the most. And the one that jumps off the page right now is Florida, just in terms of some inventory recovery there. If you look at the markets that have seen the largest inventory gains over the last few months, six of the nine largest kind of winners or ralliers there in terms of inventory have been down there in Florida. So I think that's an area of the country that will certainly be worth watching. They kind of stand out from an affordability standpoint. You're starting to see inventory build there a little bit. So there's some questions about, you know, whether that'll soften prices or not. We'll see on that front. When we look at months of supply, obviously that's a key metric for the market. We've got 3.7 months worth of inventory out there, which is the best that we've seen since the middle of 2020. So things have gotten a little better. Now, part of that is because, you know, sales have slowed and it's allowed inventory to build a little bit. And we'll see if we reverse course here as interest rates come down and potentially demand picks up. That's kind of been the catch-22 that we've been in the market for the last 18 months or so. But right now, I mean, you know, all in, it feels a little bit Goldilocks-y right now. Interest rates are probably about where you want them to not cool the market down too much, not pick it up too much. You're seeing economic news come in kind of where you want it. You're seeing inventory and sale to inventory ratios kind of where you want them. We'll see how long we stay here. It's you know, we haven't been in the Goldilocks zone very, very long over the last couple of years, but we're kind of in one at the moment. But there's, you know, there's the possibility that we fluctuate in either direction here as we get into the spring buying season, depending on what happens with broader economic news and what happens with rates.
Because nothing ever happens every 30 days, right? We don't know where war may break out next, or worst case peace, huh? But you know, what does that all mean, you know, for home prices? You know, despite the pressures in the market and sort of an overall feeling of, you know, a dismal view, your numbers show really a hotter than normal spring and summer when it comes to home prices, and annual growth rates continue to climb. Can we expect that heat to continue through the winter? And what's the expectation as we move forward?
Yeah, and I think home prices are something that you really have to take a nuanced look at right now, right? And when you kind of look at what happened in 2023, effectively what happened was last year, interest rate, the conversations were very similar from a timing perspective to what we're having right now. Rates kind of peaked in October, November, really slowed down. And I mean, a year ago, we were talking about crashing home prices, right? And the corrections that were taking place. And then rates fell down to 6%. It spurred activity this spring and heated things up. And a lot of that heat took place really from February through kind of June, July of this year, even on a seasonally adjusted basis, right? We all know that that's typically the peak time for prices and price growth. But even when you adjust for seasonal trends, that's when you were seeing growth. And then what's actually happened over the last 5 months or so is rates went from 6, 6.5, 7, 7.5, up near 8. And if you adjust for seasonality, what you've seen is the housing market really start to slow down from a price perspective from some of those highs that we saw earlier this spring and summer and come back down to normal. Now, those annual home price growth rates, which just simply look at where prices are today versus a year ago, well, prices were falling at this time last year. And so those annual home price growth rates, if you look at the ICE Home Price Index, in September, they were up 4.2% year over year. October, they're up 4.6% year over year. November is actually going to see some cold housing market numbers come in. When you look at home price indexes and you look under the hood, they're going to show some weakness, at least in my expectation in November. But that annual home price growth rate most likely will press higher in November, just based on the momentum that's out there and based on what was happening at this time last year. And so you've got to take a very nuanced look at what's going on. Annual home price growth rates are accelerating. But if you look under the hood, they're likely to kind of flatten out and maybe ease a little bit next year. When you look at what's truly going on a month over month basis, it's actually been cooling and it probably will be cool through the tail end of this year. The real question for 2024, or I guess maybe the real answer for 2024, is going to come in where interest rates are as we get into February in March of next year. As we get into that spring home buying season, are we still where we're at right now? Have rates even eased further from where we are right now? That could kind of re-spur and reheat some of that activity out there, make prices extremely sticky or push even higher. Or do we see a little bit of regression, right? Do we see some strong economic news that makes folks kind of rethink things, and that shifts the landscape as we move into next year? So, you know, it's one thing to talk about where rates and demand are in December when we're around the holidays and volumes are low. The story of 2024 is going to be told with where interest rates in the early kind of February, March, April timeframe of next year. And you could see that pendulum swing to reheat. You could see it swing to cooling depending on where interest rates are here in, over the next few months.
Well, earlier this month, ICE reported in the Mortgage Monitor report that tappable equity is back to within 3% of its peak last summer. But it reported that the borrowers aren't withdrawing that equity at anywhere near the rate they have historically and in all sorts of interest rate environments. Can you talk through those numbers and what you're seeing there?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the good news here is, as you mentioned, equity is kind of rebounded. Now it's down in some of those West Coast and pandemic boom markets where prices still aren't back to 2022 levels, but it's at new all-time highs in some of these Midwestern and Northeastern markets. And when you look at mortgage holders as a whole, they have over $10.5 trillion of what we call tappable equity, right? So it's equity that you could borrow against while still keeping a 20% cushion in your home, borrowing relatively conservatively, about $10.5 trillion, $10.6 trillion to be exact, in equity that they could borrow against out there. Now, to your point, they're a little bit reluctant at the moment to utilize that equity. So if we look over the last 12 years or so leading up into the early stages of the pandemic, the trend has been that borrowers withdraw a little less than 1%, 0.9% to be exact, of their equity each quarter via either home equity lines of credit or via first lien cash out refinances, the combination of those two. What we've seen over the last 18 months is this kind of drawback in willingness to withdraw equity. And it's simply because of the increased cost due to rising interest rates to borrow against that equity, right? In the third quarter, the average interest rate on cash out refis was well above 7%. If you look at our McDash home equity database, it says the introductory rate on a second lien HELOC in the third quarter was over 9%. And folks just aren't willing to tap into that equity, even though it's available at those interest rates, right? So if we quantify that a little bit, it was over $50 billion that wasn't withdrawn in the third quarter of this year. It's been $250 billion that otherwise likely would have been withdrawn that hasn't been withdrawn over the last 18 months. And I mean, that's part of what the Fed is trying to do, right? Raising interest rates to increase the cost of borrowing, to kind of slow down spending out there in the broader economy. But we're seeing and feeling it very acutely here in the mortgage and housing market. That being said, I think there's still some opportunity there for 2024 if rates ease, right? It makes that equity a little bit more attractive to utilize. You could see a little bit of pickup in cash out refis that have been driving that refinance space. And even in that home equity space that's been a little bit constrained over the last couple of quarters, as soon as that Fed starts to ease, and you mentioned earlier, potentially three rate declines next year, that makes those second lien HELOCs a little bit cheaper and a little bit more attractive. And so we could see that needle move a little bit and a little bit more equity utilization as we move into 2024 as well.
We've covered an awful lot of ground here, as usual, because, you bring so much to the table here that our listeners really need to understand and be aware of. But what haven't we touched on yet, but should? Anything that, as the old saying goes, you and your fellow wizards at ICE are currently focused on digging into that you find particularly interesting or would be of interest to our listeners?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot, right? One of the things that's been exciting about being acquired by ICE this year is just the expanded data sets that we're going to have at our fingertips and all of the additional research that we can now do. And so we have a very kind of rich and robust research pipeline kind of planned out for 2024. Look forward to kind of doing that research and sharing the results with you over the next 12 months. But one thing that we are acutely focused on at ICE, and one thing that we're asked about a lot, is the impacts of climate change on housing finance, the mortgage market, borrowers, the secondary market, and how it's affecting everyone. We were talking earlier before we jumped on the podcast about New Orleans and some of the impacts and the cost of home ownership, just specifically driven by hazard insurance and your policy premiums and how much they've grown in those areas. And so we've been doing a lot of research there, both ICE themselves and Black Knight previously, and now we're coming together and kind of consolidating all of that research There'll be some new data sets that we're bringing to market on, you know, what are those premiums today? How do they vary by geography? Which markets are the most acutely being impacted? And how does that impact the downstream capital markets and expectations for mortgage performance as well? And so we look forward to, you know, sharing a lot of that research and that underlying data with folks as we move into 2024. And if there are folks listening that are acutely interested in that and have been exploring that themselves, love for them to reach out and we can kind of collaborate on that and kind of share what we've been doing as well.
Thank you so much. And I'll just add here sort of in finality, because odd things strike me as somehow similarly joined. But, you know, in the last 10 days, the Los Angeles Dodgers have laid out $700 million to bring over Ohtani as a player for the Dodgers. But also, I noticed that $700 million is how much Warren Buffett just invested at D.R. Horton in regard to their stock. Now, I wish, you know, Mr. Ohtani and the Dodgers all the best with their relationship. But my money is that Warren Buffett is thinking about what things are going to be like in 2024 in a very realistic way with his $700 million. So, again, you know, two numbers that mean nothing as far as any coordination between them, but they just stuck out in my mind.
There you go. Well, I hope they both do well, but I'm going to go with Warren Buffett as well. Hopefully he can.
Yeah, I think he's got the better chance. So, Andy, again, thank you so much for taking the time to share these very valuable insights. I hope that all of our listeners do tune in and sign up for the Mortgage Monitor. It is critical information in real time about where things are. And, you know, I hope we can do this again in the spring and you can give us an idea as to where things are going. And hopefully then, too, we'll be able to see that the optimism that I think this podcast overall shows will turn into reality.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. Happy to be back anytime.
Great. Thank you, Andy. Thanks to everyone for listening. Happy holidays. Happy New Year to everyone. And again, thanks a lot for joining FNF Unplugged. And I hope you all have a great and profitable day.
If you have questions, comments, or would like us to feature a specific topic, email fnfeducation@fnf.com. Thanks for downloading FNF Unplugged, a presentation of the FNF family of companies. All rights reserved. This podcast is being provided for informational purposes only. The podcast is not a comprehensive overview of the subject and is not intended to provide legal or financial advice or any endorsement of any product or business. The views expressed by podcast guests are their own, and their appearance on the podcast does not imply any endorsement of them or any entity they represent, including Fidelity National Financial or its directors. Please seek legal or financial advice before taking any action on the matters or products discussed in this podcast.